Welcome, henchmen, back to another action-packed episode of the Deadly Podcast, the Kung Fu brought to you by the Villains Man with myself, JVD, as I attempt to traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artist in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. If you want to keep up with the podcast, you can do so over on Twitter at Deadly Kung Fu Pod or over at Mastodon under the same name, or you can follow all the Villains Man social media accounts and keep up with the podcast there. You want to keep up with myself, JVD, you can do so over on Twitter at JVDATVD, where I will talk comics, movies, wrestling, whatever I feel like I need to. Now, today we're going to jump back into Master of Kung Fu Volume 1. I call it Volume 1 because I don't think there's anything else called Master of Kung Fu that's a major series. Everything is usually Shang-Chi after all this gets over with. Now, we just had the big epic Golden Dagger saga, which was four parts, and if you listen to those throughout the beginning of the videos, just start on number four, listen to the beginning of it, it'll tell you where to backtrack to on the episode list, and then go through all those, and then come back to number four. Now, we're going to do some one-shots here today, and there's a bit of a mix-up at this point in the volume, and I'll explain as I go, it's no big deal. But we're going to go ahead and jump into the one issue I dreaded reading as soon as I opened up the first page. Master of Kung Fu, number 52. It's titled A Night at the 1001 Nights. Your writer is Doug. We got a new artist and penciler, Kenneth Pollard, who also done the inks on the books. The letterers go to John Costanza and Irving Watanabe, and your editor is Archie Goodwin. John Romita Jr. and Al Milgrom done the cover for the book. Despite his falling out with Sir Dennis Nayland Smith, Shang-Chi investigates a lead from the head of MI6 in Morocco, where Fu Manchu may be active again. Searching through the night, a window shatters above him, and to his surprise, and my own dreadful surprise, is Rufus T. Hackstabber. Oh my god. This is where I instantly dreaded reading this book. Rufus comes falling towards him. He comically explains that three C-Fan assassins broke into his hotel and tried to kill him. Giving chase, the trio of assassins leaps down and warns Shang-Chi to stand aside or die. Refusing to allow harm to befall his friend, the assassins attack but stand no chance against the Master of Kung Fu. Realizing they are defeated, the C-Fan warn the two that this isn't over and flee. As they oddly hop into Rufus's rented cab, Shang-Chi asks him why he's in Morocco. The New York cab driver informs him that he's on vacation to visit his cousin Quigley J. Warmflash, who runs the Blue Carrot nightclub in the city. Hackstabber drives terribly haphazardly through the city, destroying cafe setups and merchant carts before crashing into his cousin's establishment. Lucky for Quigley, Rufus and Shang-Chi crash through the wall and take out two gunmen who are holding him up while searching for an exotic artifact of some importance. Saving his life, the two are curious what the gunmen were looking for and are informed that thieves wanted an artifact from an atrocious lot he had. As if on cue, Dinah, Quigley's daughter, I use that in quotations heavily, daughter, walks in as he mentions she dumped the lot earlier while he was being pursued. As Rufus swoons over the beautiful blonde, she tells Shang-Chi she sold the lot to 101 Knights Kuro shop just down the alley. Our hero tells him all to wait here, which Rufus doesn't mind as he eye-fucks every inch of the gorgeous blonde Dinah. Oh, God. As Shang-Chi goes to the shop and investigate, I'm really trying to get through this book. Oh, man, I hate this character. We'll get more on that later. But back to the synopsis at hand. Upon entering the building, Shang-Chi thinks it's closed until the lights come on as C-Fan assassins surround him. They are ordered to kill him by none other than Tiger Claw, former lodge master of his father and the man who tried to kill him and Rufus when they first met. Before the fight begins, Rufus and his cab, with Quigley and Dinah in tow, crash through the wall and scatter the assassins. Rufus tries to be brave and confront Tiger Claw over their previous encounter and gets slapped across the room for trying, thank God, best part of the book. The assault on his friend quickly puts Shang-Chi into action as he quickly defeats the C-Fan and squares off with their leader. This gives Quigley and Dinah time to search for the artifact the gunmen were looking for, which happens to be a porcelain elephant. Before they can grab it, Shang-Chi knocks out Tiger Claw with an uppercut that sends him crashing beside the statue, causing it to tip over and break. Seeing the elephant was empty, Quigley throws a fit because the gunman had said there was some elixir of immortality sealed within it. This angers Rufus because his cousin lied to him. It also angers Shang-Chi because his whole trip to Morocco had turned into a waste of time in regards to Fu Manchu. Shang-Chi asks his friends if he wants to leave with him, and to our hero's amusement, Rufus turns around and lays a big, wet, terrible 19 black and white movie kiss on Dinah. Ugh. Blushing, because that's what we do in those movies. She turns away playfully flirting as he chases the young woman to suggestively grab her. This brings a smile to Shang-Chi's face and a smile is mine as I end this book, as Shang-Chi realizes that maybe this trip wasn't a waste of time at all. Well, good for him, because this read was a big waste of time for me. Now, because I'm doing two one-shot books, I'm going to go ahead and jump into the notes. Now, why do I hate Rufus T. Backstabber? Well, my hate for this character started in episode 18, where I covered A Movement in Blood, which just happens to be the last giant-sized book in the Master of Kung Fu series. So yes, I had to read a giant-sized book full of this character. Now, as I covered in that episode, Rufus Backstabber is a homage to Groucho Marx. Now, what I don't understand about this book is Rufus was a cab driver in New York. When he takes a vacation to Morocco, why does he have to rent a cab that looks just like a cab in New York City? Why? You're on vacation. Why would you want that cab? I guess that just happens to do with some of the comedy back then with the character. I hate it. It's so awful. God, it's so awful. Now, the interesting thing about this opening page when he's jumping through the window is when Shang-Chi is in her monologue, it says, "More than a year passed, I believe I'd seen the last of the strange man called Rufus T. Backstabber." This has been 27 issues ago, but this should make Shang-Chi around the age of 21 unless I've missed something, because I try to keep up with the dates with him and Iron Fist as I do the podcast. Now, in his debut in Special Marvel Edition 15, Shang-Chi is 19. Fu Manchu, and he sends him on his mission to kill Dr. Petrie, even mentions that he's 19. Now, in Giant Size Master of Kung Fu number 1, Fu Manchu sends his elite assassins to kill Shang-Chi on his birthday, seeing that it's fitting. So he has to be 20 by that book if we're going by dates that we're getting here. So he's roughly the legal age of the drink at this point. Now, we get another homage in this book because we just have to, and I do not know why Doug Minch likes these characters, which I guess I do, given the time. This is the 70s, and these comedians at this time are still popular, you know, they're not fading out of existence just yet. But Quigley J. Warmflash is a homage to the comedian W.C. Fields. Oddly enough, he died on Christmas Day 1946. And I looked this guy up. Apparently, he had a huge ego. He thought way too much of himself. And on top of this, apparently he hated children. And apparently he had children of his own, so I'm different age, I guess. Different strokes for different folks. I'm not really sure. But much like I did Groucho Marx, I went and looked up, like, funniest moments, funniest scenes. And I guess it's just of the time because this guy is worse than Groucho Marx when it comes to comedy, in my opinion. But like I said, I guess that's just the age difference, the difference in time, the difference in what comedy is then, comedy is now. And I guess I don't really find a lot of comedy funny these days. My comedy is all like, you know, late 70s, 80s, early 90s. But yeah, just could not relate to this at all. Quigley has this daughter, and like I said, heavy quotations, daughter, because he introduces her as a daughter. Clearly not his daughter. It's his exotic belly dancer and singer at the Blue Carrot named Dinah. Now, he says daughter, and when you first see her, you could see that, okay, yeah, it's his daughter, until she walks up, and she looks like she might be like 22, 23, and obviously, he's probably in his 40s. She kind of like puts his hand inside of his coat like she's loving on him. And then Rufus is just like, hubbada, 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 like his tongue's about to fall out of his mouth. And like, They should have just drew this guy with a boner sticking out of his pants because he just can't fucking stop staring at her. In this day and age in comics and where the world's at, a book like this would get torn apart if Marvel done it. But, you know, like much of the Master of the Kung Fu and a lot of the content that's in it, and it's considered extremely offensive today in regard to the way Shang-Chi is colored, the name of Fu Manchu. But anyways, yeah. Completely terrible. Dinah, she's just there for really no reason but to let Rufus T. Hackstabber do the Groucho Marx stuff and crack a bunch of dirty jokes that you're supposed to understand. For instance, as I read this book, they're talking about this item, right? And Quigley's like, as I was saying, my disarming daughter handled the transaction of the 69 hot items. And, Groucho Marx even makes a comment about, like, as he's staring at her belly and her waist right above her vagina, he's like, well, I could find the diamond in the smooth anytime. So, yeah, a lot of bad sexual window in these books. Completely terrible. The good thing about this book, the action in this book is pretty freaking awesome. The way that this is drawn from in combat, almost like each scene is, like, the movement is very fluid. Like, you can tell, like, what happens from one panel to the next panel. Like, you can picture it in your head pretty well, the movement of how Shang-Chi is attacking and knocking people out. And it even gets better once he enters the Kuro shop and the action's there. Now, his fight with Tiger Claw. Tiger Claw was apparently pretty deadly when we first meet him in Giant Size Number 4. And he does seem to be landing blows on each other. But it seems like Shang-Chi's skills has come too far in this time frame, and he seems like he is way too much for Tiger Claw as he defeats him. Now, his defeating him breaks this elephant, and the elephant is the key to this whole book. It's a whole plot point because it had this elixir of vitality in it, and Quigley, when he had it, wasn't aware of it. Now, there's a throwback to this and later on in the volume, and when we go back to Giant Size Number 2, that's Episode 16, Fires of Rebirth, we learned that there's an elephant that some of the Phansakar were after that had elixir immortality that Fu Manchu wanted. So now we know that this elephant, there's multiple elephants. It was a matter of finding one that had it. And apparently the Tiger Claw wanted the immortality for himself. So he apparently is looking for these elephants. And this is a false elephant. Very much akin to the Golden Dragon Saga, if you want to go check that out. Really good story from Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. And also, the cool thing about Fires of Rebirth, now that I think about it, it's the first appearance of Clive Reston. Excellent book. So go read that Giant Size Master of Kung Fu number 2. Great story. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this one shot up. There's not a whole lot to talk to. I hate Rufus T. Backstabber. I hate Quigley, J. Warren Flash. I hate these homages. I get it. It's of the time. It just does not sit well with me as a reader, as a fan who's loving these books. Like, these are the books I wish I did not have to read in these. But it's continuity. I've got to read it and get through it. And like I said, we learned a little about, you know, the age of Shang-Chi in this book, which I like keeping up with that stuff because we know there's the sliding Marvel time scale stuff. And we've seen Tiger Claw. Which I guess, you know, thinking about with Tiger Claw, throw that back real fast. Kind of goes back to Fu Manchu, how he was lonely with everything, and this is one of the reasons he's lonely. Like, one of these head guys that he, you know, trusted turned his back on him, and now he's actually trying to get his immortality for himself. Now, if he knows Fu Manchu is dead or alive, it doesn't really say. But I'm assuming that Tiger Claw and the connections that he knows has to know that Fu Manchu's gone. And thus why he's wanting the Elixir of Immortality. So, but with that, we're going to take a break and play a podcasting promo for one of my friends. And when we get back, we're getting to more confusion here within the first volume of Master Kung Fu.
What's up, nerds? Tyler Mack here from the 30 and Nerdy Podcast, the flagship show of Bad Cast Company Productions. I am interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to tell you about the show. At 30 and Nerdy Podcast, we talk all things nerd culture and do it while entertaining, enlightening, and educating the masses of the nerd world order. So when you're done with this phenomenal show you're already listening to, zoom on over to 30 and Nerdy Podcast, hit that subscribe button, give it a listen, a rating, and review, and don't forget to check out 30andnerdypodcast.com. Cheers to you, nerds.
And welcome back to Deadly Podcast Kung Fu, brought to you by the villain, the man, myself, JVD. So we're jumping back here into the confusing part here of Master Kung Fu Volume 1. So I just covered issue 52, and we're skipping 53 because it's a reprint of number 20. Check that back on episode 4. But at the time, Marvel was doing a lot of these reprint books, and just off the top of my head, X-Men at the time was completely notorious with it. So, after 53, we get into a four-part story in Master Kung Fu, and oddly enough, 54 is the beginning of the story. 55 is a solo book in the, middle of this story. So, what I'm doing is I'm skipping the big story, and I'm going to jump right into 55 and cover it, since it's a solo story, and it gives me a little length to this episode, since I've already covered one solo story, and I need to wash the taste out of my mouth from Rufus T. Hackstabber, and Quigley J. Warmflesh. So let's go ahead and jump into Master of Kung Fu 55, titled The Ages of Death, with your writer, as always, is Doug. Now we have Mike Zeck, legendary Mike Zeck, as your penciler, Jim Mooney on inks, Phil Rachelson on colors, John Costanza on letters, and Archie Goodwin is your editor. Taking Tar upon his offer to stay in his hotel room, Shang-Chi decides to take a peaceful bath while doing some recommended reading from Clive Reston. But quiet doesn't last long as he hears the door click open. Two murderers bust into the bathroom with knives drawn, and our hero isn't there. Suddenly, he ambushes them from being wedged above the doorframe and easily takes them out. As he ties them up, the duo breaks easily and tells them they were sent by Han Sung, which surprises Shang-Chi because they were friends last time they met. One of the killers tells the Master of Kung Fu that Han Sung has something precious to Fu Manchu, and many of his Si-Fan assassins have been sent after him. Thinking about when his teacher Han Sung taught him as a teen, Shang-Chi recalls the time they snuck above Fu Manchu's private chambers and watched him mix and drink the elixir of immortality. As they watched, Han Sung expressed his desire to have the elixir for himself, and after they left, that was the last time Shang-Chi saw him. Looking back at the situation, Shang-Chi gets the information of where they were to receive their payments and heads to a tavern called the Limehouse. Upon entering, he notices he's being watched as he begins to question the bartender. Catching the man in a lie, one of the drunk patrons spills too much information on the whereabouts of Han Sung's daughter at a store called China Imports. The thugs who are watching Shang-Chi try to shut the drunk up and are warned by our hero to stop. Instead, they attack him and are easily defeated as the bartender runs into the back of the Limehouse. Master of Kung Fu gives chase and finds none other than Han Sung is in the back, but is shocked that his former teacher has aged far older than what he should be. He tells Shang-Chi that he never left Fu Manchu's fortress that night, but instead was captured and used in a biological experiment to discover the mystery of rejuvenation in the advent of his new son. Han Sung explains to his former student that the experiment aged him far beyond his age, and now he is owed the elixir of immortality as a payment for what happened. And now that Shang-Chi is in London, he believes he's been sent to assassinate him and retrieve this stolen elixir, so he has sent his own sons to kill him. Our hero tries to explain to Han Sung that he turned his back on his father long ago, and for all he knows, he's dead now. Refusing to believe so, Han Sung's sons attack as the old man flees outside. Again, Shang-Chi easily dispatches the men, but loses his former teacher due to him still having the speed of a man his actual age. Knowing he is heading for his daughter, our hero runs to the China Imports. He arrives before Han Sung and tries to talk his daughter into giving him the elixir because he fears it will kill her father. With a container in hand, she hesitates to turn it over because she's torn between loyalty and fear that Shang-Chi is right. Before she can decide, Han Sung shows up with his sons armed with guns. That's even more of a mouthful now that I read that. and walks to a fake dagger hanging on the wall, which is a real container that stores the stolen elixir of immortality. As he goes to drink it, Han's daughter moves to stop him, giving Shang-Chi the moment he needs to disarm the gunman. Using the distraction for himself, Han Sung flees with his daughter, giving chase to him to stop. As our hero chases them himself, he recalls when he learned the truth of the elixir of immortality. He learns that if anyone takes his father's version of the potion, it will kill them because Fu Manchu himself has grown resilient to the original formula and needs a stronger dose. After arriving at a bridge, Han Sung has climbed the cables where no one can get to him. Shang-Chi begs him to stop, but his former teacher still believes him to be assassin and then drinks the elixir instead. He screams as his body is racked with pain, causing him to fall in the river below. One of Han Sung's sons, there's another mouthful, I should have caught that beforehand. One of his sons looks at Shang-Chi, blaming him for his father's death. Walking away from the tragedy, our hero tells him, no, that's not possible. Han Sung's own fear of death is what killed him. So, the thing about these one-shots is, usually I'll get the synopsis and then the notes together. And, you know, I would record that at one time. That's how a lot of my older episodes were done, and I decided to bring it back for this episode, given when I was checking the order of books, you know, and lining everything out for future episodes. Now, this worked out my favor because issue 52 was recorded, and then I stopped, and now I read this issue and got it done, and it kind of worked out my favor because this is crazy. I just mentioned in the previous episode where Shang-Chi was the age of 21. Based on some of the dates we've gathered throughout the issue, now this completely throws that on its head. So, when Shang-Chi stops the two murderers while he's taking his bath, one of them says, he asks who tried to kill him. He says, by Han Sung to prevent you from killing him. Why should I wish to kill us, Han Sung? We're friends. I've not seen him for years. I was not yet 15 when my father sent him away. So, let's just shoot that he's at the age of 15. So let's move on to where he meets the old man Han Sung, and this is what he says. It's called the Biological Experiment, Research into the Mysteries of Rejuvenation in Preparation for the Advent of His New Son. Shang-Chi's inner monologue is, then my father had planned Shaka Khan's resurrection for almost a decade. So if Shang-Chi is 15 in the flashbacks in this book, or not yet 15, but we're just going to say he's 15, and he says here that Shaka Khan's plans were more than a decade, that would make Shang-Chi 25, not 21. So that's interesting because, and I get this at the time, and I kind of was fearing that this is a thing that I would get wrong with the age, and hey, you know, I'll admit when I'm wrong. So in Marvel Special Edition, just like I mentioned in the last episode, he was 19, which was September 4th, 1973 was the release date. Master of Kung Fu 55, this book was released on May 10th, 1977. So there's a six-year gap there. May, or a couple months short. So yeah. So you had 6 on 219, he's actually 25. So it seems almost every year of publication for Marvel at this time, Shang-Chi is turning an age. Which means at this time that Danny should be pretty close to the same age as he is. I don't know, that's what gets interesting, because we know that Danny's 19, because when he got to Kung Lung, he was 9. And then, at this time, Marvel Premiere number 15 came out in February 19th, 1974. So if you had 3 years to that, Iron Fist would roughly be around the age of, 22, 23, give or take. So, they're not really the same age as I've said previously in the past, but they're very close to the same age, which still makes it cool because, you know, they've teamed up already 3 different times. So yeah, Shang-Chi's 25, and like I said, that would make Iron Fist himself 22, because he was 19. So there we go. We know every year at this point is a year in their lives. So, next up, I just want to get out of the way. The opening of this book, the first page, super, super cool as we get the title for Ages of Death. And the little quote here is pretty cool. It says, a lifetime of love is too short. A lifetime of pain is too long. But in a lifetime of both, there is a balance. And to live but a single moment more or less is time stolen and life wasted. really sets the mood for this book. And the cover itself, as we see Shang-Chi taking out two thugs, or maybe they're Han Sung's men, behind him, it's cool. We have a young face of Han Sung, and then there's a clock, and it looks like it reads almost 3, and then he's aged, and then it's like it almost reads 6. We see a potion. He's a very old man. It reads almost 12. And then basically the skin is melting off his face. And then we see the dagger where we have his stolen formula that we find out. And then there's a clock and it's 12. And then there's a skull that has very little flesh on it. Very cool opening for the book. Really hinting at what you're going to read. And you have no clue that it's that. And I love that great image. You will definitely see that on social media. And it'll probably be the first thing I post when I get to this book, because I really don't want to post any hackstabber stuff at all. Real quick note, right in the opening, this is the exact same page. We're seeing everybody united. We see here that Black Jack Tar has this luxury hotel that he stayed at, and Shang-Chi's been there for 3 days. He's going to go visit Sir Dennis Smith, because obviously they have a friendship. Despite what's happened, I could see that he would go see him. We don't know if he's quit at this point. We don't know if anybody's quit at this point. We just know they've all left besides Liko. She's actually said she's quit. So Shang-Chi's taking a bath, and he's looking at some recommended reading that he's got from Clive Reston. This makes me like Clive Reston even more. He's talking about Tar's humor, because Tar's humor is very weird. And he's talking about how words sometimes have second meaning to him, and it's kind of strange, which would explain why so many books Reston's given to me are strange, and he is picking up off the shelf A Clockwork Orange. Really like that. That's pretty cool. Now let's go ahead and talk about the main new character here, Han Sung, as we're meeting him. And I like this because it's a flashback. We're learning more about Shang-Chi's training and how he, apparently Han Sung, is this great martial artist. And he's very different from a lot of what we've seen from Fu Manchu's main henchman. He's very exuberant. He seems very happy, very outgoing. And Shang-Chi mentions this by his different faces as he's talking about him. And he's very excited to show Shang-Chi this hidden tunnel that he's found where he watches the Elixir of Immortality be made. And it's almost like he's trying to urge Shang-Chi into stealing it for him. Because, you know, as children have a habit of taking what their parents are messing with. For instance, my kid, my youngest boy, who is a year and a half old, he will steal your cell phone. If he sees you on your cell phone, he wants it. He picks up, he says, hi, or bye-bye, hello. Or, you know, because we live in a digital age, he'll try to change the TV with my phone because he sees I change the channel with my phone. So that's the first thing I thought of when I seen this. I was like, he's trying to get him to steal the Elixir of Immortality, but instead he gets caught. And this brings me to a reason why I love Fu Manchu, because he's a villain and he's so much more. He's a scientist. He's a mystical, arcane spellcaster. And we're getting some more of this science stuff. And I feel like we've kind of really stepped away from this with Fu Manchu in the series. Because early on in the book, we were seeing a lot of scientific experiments that Fu Manchu was building on. And this whole stealing the life from somebody to inject it into somebody else really kind of makes you wonder what Shaka Khan, because we learn about him here, that this is something that's got to do with him. If he was actually stealing the life from people to put in the Elixir of Immortality, and I think that's pretty cool. And it's actually pretty diabolical, and it makes a ton of sense. Reminds me of a short horror story that I've written in my book. If I get to the chance to actually get to publish it this year. So I really like that. I thought that was pretty cool and really freaking evil. Hey, I'm going to steal your life force so I can be young forever. And it's cool how a lot of this is explained, because I just went over the first flashback with Shang-Chi where he first sees Elixir of Immortality. And he says this. He's like, I remember the first time I seen my father's Elixir of Immortality. And it's why him and Han Sung are watching Fu Manchu take it and mix it. Now, we go back through the second time, and as he's watching it, he even says it's a secret. He's just going to see his dad, and it's Fu Manchu and Ducharme, and she's giving him the elixir and a chalice, and he tells her, my flesh is still resilient, Ducharme, but deep inside I feel it, age, chafing at the edges of my spirit. It require more, I suspect, even more to flush it out. So therefore, we're learning that he needs this stronger dose. You just don't realize how strong of a dose is until we see the third flashback. And this all plays into the finale of the book because Shang-Chi realizes, like, I need to tell him that he is going to die. Because we realize out of Shang-Chi's past, outside of Fu Manchu, before he knew exactly what his father was up to, he loved his father. It seems like this is the only person outside Minai, his brother, adoptive brother Midnight, that he actually cares for, and that's this guy, Hong Sung. And Hong Sung is on the bridge suspension cable about to drink it, this is where Shang-Chi's like, the third time I've seen it, is Ducharme was taking the elixir of immortality, because in the past, we've learned that she takes it as well, because here before the Golden Daggers, we learned that she's been taking it for like 40 years, and that's why she looks so young. She's drinking Fu Manchu, it shows her in the flashback. He slaps it out of her hands. He says, that is mine, Ducharme. I have told you never to take the Vital without asking me. We must use different serums now. My system has developed a tolerance to the elixir of immortality through prolonged use requiring an ever-increased dosage. Should anyone ever administer my mixture, the result will be death. So, and as soon as, like, and it's cool because first we get where he's knocking it out of her hands and he's telling her not to take what's his. Then we see Han Sung as an old man and he's almost like he's excited as he's drinking it. And Shang-Chi's yelling at him, no. And then we get to, like, it will kill you, Fu Manchu's explaining to her. And when he says death, that panel where he says results in death, we see that it is killing Han Sung. And it's really cool how it's wrote out here at the end of the book. And I love how his sons are telling, you know, you killed our father. This is your fault. And he's like, no, your father's fear of death is what killed him. And he's right, because he would not listen to reasoning. He wouldn't listen to Shang-Chi that he had turned his back on his father, that he was not there to assassinate him. Because you figured Hong Sheng, knowing as skilled as Shang-Chi is, that he would have killed him. What I don't get is why Shang-Chi did not explain this to him when he met him. And I get, yeah, there's a lot of interference, but why can't he just tell him, hey, you know, I watched this kill a person, don't take it. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. This was a happy accident with jumping to this issue because it's one shot, because the Hackstabber issue on 52 had a lot to do with the Elixir of Immortality. We don't know if there's any Elixir of Immortality up on the space station that Fu Manchu escaped from during the Golden Daggers. So I like how this Elixir of Immortality is really playing into the story after we see the potential death of Fu Manchu. And Shang-Chi even mentions it. He's like, for all I know, my father is dead. So, the only thing I hate about this book, and this is a bad habit from Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, and if you listen to a lot of the past Shang-Chi episodes in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, I complain about this, the lack of names for people. We have Han Sung, we have the original characters from MI6 and Shang-Chi, they all have names, but Hong Sung's daughter doesn't have a name, none of his sons are given a name, the bartender doesn't even have a name, and just giving them a name just, you know, makes the story flow a little bit more better. And it also would help me more a synopsis instead of saying he, sons, Hong Sung sons. I mean, a lot of tongue twisters. There's Hong Sung sons armed with guns. It would really help with synopsis there. But this story is excellent. Good palate cleanser after reading 52. And after this, I just mentioned Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. We're about to get into it. The very final stories of Shang-Chi and Iron Fist after this episode. And Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. So there's your little teaser. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode up of Deadly Podcast Kung Fu. I'm JVD. If you like our music, check out Rushing Tiger by Kuro over on SoundCloud. But remember, guys, in the end, support your favorite podcast. Support your local comic book shops and keep reading comics, guys.